Good morning. You are watching Deprogram with Ted Rall and Jamarl Thomas. It is Friday, June 12th, 2026. Thank you so much for joining us. It's 9 a.m. on the East Coast. We are here until 10 a.m. TMI at 10 a.m. to 11. 11 to 12 will be the DMZ America podcast rescheduled from yesterday. Sorry for the inconvenience for those of you who were came to look for that yesterday. Jamarl, good morning. How are you?
What's going on, man? You doing okay?
I'm probably doing better than our president, who seems to be living in a bizarre world of his own design. I know you're the sci-fi fan here, although I love sci-fi, but just not as much as you. I love sci-fi. But I think you're at 11. I'm at like a 9.5. By the way, do you know the sci-fi writer John Scalzi?
Yes.
Are you familiar? Oh, he's a friend of mine. I was just wondering, do you like him? Yeah,
he's that Man's War?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and Red.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. He was it's a funny story. So John Scalzi, he now a very brilliant, very successful Hugo Award winning sci-fi novelist. He the way I met him was in the mid 1990s when I was just getting going as a cartoonist, and so you remember AOL. When you came on the screen, it would go, "You've got mail," and there was the big logo, right? And so he had this idea. He worked at AOL. He lived in Virginia, where AOL was HQ'd at the time, and he was an editor there. And they gave him like a ridiculous amount of money to do fun, weird shit. So he created an Easter egg for the people who accidentally clicked the big logo. Even though you're not supposed to click the big logo, but people did. And so they were like, oh, let's give them something fun if they happen to click the logo. So I was one of the cartoonists who, like, they hired me, like, to have a cartoon, like, once a week that would, like, they had a stable of cartoonists. And I was one of the cartoonists in the rotation that would, like, if you accidentally hit the logo, you would get a Ted Rall cartoon. But this is the really funny part. So this is not John's fault. John's a very tech-savvy dude, but I was like, okay, so where do I email my cartoons? He's like, oh, we can't get them by email. I'm like, what? You're the nation's biggest email internet company. And he's like, yeah, you have to mail it to us. Like, old school. And I was like, okay, granted, it was like 1995 or 1996.
It's AOL.
But it was like, yeah, it was AOL, and already people were sending file attachments. We were still on dial-up, and it would take, like, now you hit it and it's gone. It goes in 30 seconds or 10 seconds. But, like, at the time, it would take, like, 10 minutes, and you'd see the little thermometer going up. But it was just so they couldn't even do that. And he goes, yeah, I know. It's very weird. I've talked to them about it. They don't get it. Anyway, so then, yeah, we knew each other for years, and, he lives – near my hometown of Dayton, Ohio now. And he's great. And anyway, I was just curious, the sci-fi thing.
It's amazing. Yeah, that's amazing. In fact, I just saw a recommendation for his book yesterday. Like, channels that says something like, these are my top 10 sci-fi books or whatever that people do. Yeah. And one of them was one of his books, Old Man War.
Yeah, he's just so good. And when you meet him, you're just like, yeah, it's not surprising. And he's a nice guy too, really nice guy.
What's funny about that? Speaking about that, speaking of dial-up, back during the Obama era, but it was a little bit before the Obama era, a British guy, I don't know if you heard about the story, British guy was probing, let's say hacking various things. And I'm saying hacking, but I'm putting hacking in quotes. Because really, hacking is not really the word for it. He was looking into NASA files, and NASA apparently only had the password, and he broke into the files. And he was like perusing the files.
There's a lot of that.
It's insane.
That's how the hacking scandal at the British tabloids happened. That they were basically trying people's phone mail, the royals. They all had passwords like 12345 and stuff.
NASA apparently had a password named Password. Mm-hmm. He goes in, start probing the files. And eventually he says, after going in several times, I'm not going to talk about the UFO stuff that he found or the weird stuff that's in the NASA files. But the people, when they asked them, hey, why didn't you download it? He said, because we were on dial-up and would have taken forever to download anything. And it even took forever for the files to even show up, let alone download. He gets an indicator of somebody saying, who are you? In which case, he closes it.
It's like, run away. Right.
Oh, right away. The cops come to his house. Shit. Obama was trying to get him deported to be prosecuted and put in a cage.
Oh, Jesus.
And it was it Keir Starmer? Not Keir Starmer. The one that became after, the one that came before Corbyn. Cameron, David Cameron. Mm. David Cameron effectively told Obama no and wouldn't have him deported. His mama was on TV. He's like, please don't take my son. Please don't put my son in these disgusting American prisons, et cetera, et cetera. Cameron, doing something good, prevented the guy from being deported.
Well, you know, some countries care about their nationals. I mean, you know, I always think about that. If you're a U.S. citizen and you get in trouble overseas, you're lucky if you get a consular visit. While you're rotting in jail. But, yeah. You know, I mean, if you're a citizen of many other countries, the UK included, or France, whatever, they care. They, I mean, you know, not everyone's getting out. Not everyone's getting the special treatment.
Oh, by the way, he was in Britain. He was in the UK. Yeah, he was still in the UK. It wasn't like he was in America. He was in the UK. And the cops still came to his house, meaning there was some communication from the US to the UK to reach out, to put him in a cage.
Right. But it's one thing to go and like have, you know, the constables go and knock on the door and say, hey, what's going on? Cut the shit. It's another thing to bundle you up with duct tape and extraordinarily rendition you to, you know, a lawless shithole like the United States.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, anyway, so my sci-fi reference, which I derailed myself from, today's show is called Plan 39 from Outer Space because, and by the way, I wrote that headline yesterday, right after Trump had announced for the 39th time that he had achieved a peace deal with Iran, that a signing ceremony was going to be set up and all that. Like, you know, it sounds like if it was anyone else on the planet talking, like, hey, this is really genuinely happening. But I was like, I don't know. I'm not stupid enough to think that after 38 times, the 39th time is the charm. So, you know, in a reference to Ed Wood, we decided to plan 39 from outer space because, you know, Donald Trump is living on planet Claire. He's in his own private Idaho. You choose the pop culture metaphor. And Iran, once again, overnight said, yeah, we don't know what he's talking about. And by the way, the other thing that was funny is that Trump said, like, you know, the big takeaway is that they've agreed not to have nuclear weapons. It's like you're forcing them to say that their capital is Tehran. They don't want nuclear weapons. They said that. I mean, you know, they have a fatwa. It's literally against Iranian law to try to develop nuclear weapons. It had nothing to do with us. It's like, I mean, if Trump were telling the truth, which he's not, the deal he's going to get is the status quo antebellum, right? Which is basically no nuclear weapons and the Strait of Hormuz is reopened. That's a loss. When you started a war, destroyed your alliance with, destroyed Israel. Israel already was on the way out. But then that's it, right, in terms of popular support in the U.S., you know, taking us to war against Iran. I mean, even for people who didn't care about Gaza, that did it. And so, I mean, you know, it's a loss. I don't know. I mean, I'm just like, what is wrong with this guy? Why does he keep – and what's wrong with the stock market that they believed him and the Dow went up 900 points in futures trading overnight? What is wrong with the oil futures traders that anyone takes him seriously? 39 times he's done this in 2 months.
I don't have an answer for that. Like, I don't know why anybody takes him seriously. I legit don't. I mean, you know, time one, maybe. Time three, maybe. Time eight, less so, right? 39 times. He is obviously manipulating the oil markets.
Yeah, it's like if you caught your spouse cheating on you 39 times. I mean, there's going to be a trust issue, right? I mean,
well, and they keep saying, "Well, I haven't cheated on you,"
right?
And they do it 39 times. It's like the Bill Cosby thing, right? It's like, okay, Bill Cosby say he didn't do it, but then it's like you have 39 women saying you did. Okay, maybe you didn't do it 37 times, but 38, 39, like it gives me doubts, right? I don't know.
It does give rise to some doubts, yeah.
Yes, it gives rise to some doubts. I don't know why they trust or believe anything Trump says.
And the MAGA people, what is wrong with them? I mean, look, guys, to be clear, I don't hate you guys. I just don't understand you guys. Like, why the fuck, you know, like in the yesterday morning when Trump was like, I'm going to bomb the shit out of Iran tonight. And everyone was like, yeah, Trump is going to give them what they deserve. Yeah, I'm winning again. Then immediately he issues that statement like, oh, no, I'm not bombing. Peace deal at hand. And they're like, yeah, big win. Like peace with Iran, no bombing. And then like this morning, they don't really have anything to say. And this is every day for them. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
It's weird.
Like, yeah,
it's very strange.
Aren't you embarrassed to put your name on that shit?
How do they not know this is a failure? Like the U.S. starts a war of aggression. Okay, many of them are psychopaths. So fair enough. The Trumpers, but many Democrats are psychopaths too. So I'm not casting aspersions that is not visited upon all of these houses. So they don't care. Good. Trump is going to murder a lot of people for unclear reasons. They're okay with it, right?
No.
But the problem that you have with that is, they are controlling the Strait of Hormuz, something that wasn't true before. Mm-hmm. B, the objective of destroying the state didn't happen. C, Iran is going to have tolls. And if they do come to some kind of agreement, Iran is making dictations of terms, which if you destroy the military, destroy the Air Force, destroy the government, you're winning all over. Then they don't get to dictate anything, but they are dictating terms. Meaning they're saying, in order for us to stop this, you need to give us billions of dollars back. And B, we don't trust you, so that money needs to be forwarded first. Mm-hmm. C, all war stop. Meaning, that's not coming out of a side that believe they're losing. That is mm-hmm. coming out of a side that is dictating terms with the U.S. president effectively all over the place trying to hide the fact that he failed miserably at what he was trying to accomplish. Like that, like I don't know how they are viewing this in a different way.
I mean, you know, it's interesting. We talked about the Epstein files yesterday, or 2 days ago. I mean, Vance basically argued at the time, like, you know, let's release them, you know, they're all going to come out anyway. The drip, drip, drip is worse than just a full scale release. You know, he's right. That's just from a crisis management point of view. That's always the way to go. Same thing here, right? I mean, it's the same exact thing. This is a reveal. It's a reveal that, like, I, Donald Trump, admit that I started this war and I lost. And it's like, okay, denying it 39 times is only making you look like a fool in addition to being a loser. You know, it's like, just take the loss and move on. I mean, you know, you win some, you lose some. I don't understand the personality that just decides to go this way. I don't understand. I mean, if I'm an ally, and by the way, I want to just add something to what you just said. Qatar is having secret negotiations with Iran.
I saw that. Well, they were happening apparently at the beginning of the war. Mm-hmm. Effectively, hey man, don't destroy our oil infrastructure. And we just won't wear all production. Like, don't blow our shit up.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. A, it's a recognition you have the capability of blowing that shit up.
And you know there's more of these. You know that there were other back channel communications between other Gulf states and Iran. There had to have been. These are just the ones we're learning about.
Well, the UAE had Israeli forces on the ground. I would imagine Saudi Arabia, they seemed to be okay with the war in the very beginning, up until the point where they realized, oh my God, these U.S. bases aren't protecting us. These things aren't assets. And I got to be honest, that's another thing that I don't think people realize the gravity of what is fully taking place here, because the U.S. media is not really reporting the gravity of what is effectively taking place. Some in the media space are reporting that Iran won, Trump lost. Fair enough. But they're not talking about this as an unprovoked, unmitigated war of aggression where the U.S. intentionally murdered human beings, starting off with murdering a bunch of kids at a school. They should talk about it from that context.
True.
And talk about it from the context. Trump is effectively going to have to, A, walk back, B, leaving Iran with control of the strait, C, dealing with Iran demands, one of which we want our money back, which is something that the Republicans berated Obama for doing, which is what Trump is ultimately going to have to do. They are not going to get anything better than the JCPOA. You were not able to accomplish your objectives. And more interesting is that this deal puts attacks on Israel and the surrounding regions, effectively saying, Israel, your dog also has to stop. That's new. That's not a norm. That's new. I mean, do you think Israel is going to abide by U.S. dictates on the issue of stopping your wars? Because that's one of the things that effectively is coming out of this. Meaning, Iran is not accepting a deal without Lebanon being included in the deal.
Talk about dictating terms. Talk about dictating terms, right? They're really effectively dictating terms to both adversaries, right?
Yes.
I'm going to quote my friend Jamal Thomas. You know, this is where it's the U.S. The U.S. is driving the bus here, right? I mean, it's like Israel. A lot of people on the left and the right think that Israel's in charge of the United States. I think what they mean by that is true, that Israel has an ungodly amount of influence on Congress. That's, you know, undeniable. But, you know, I've also said for years, the reality is, I mean, Israel's a welfare state, completely dependent on us. So there, I mean, and that's going to be clear. To answer your question, yeah, of course, Israel's going to have to do, if Iran tells the U.S., you know, call off your dog, and the U.S. does that, the dog will have to stay and stay put and not even wag its tail. It will have to. Israel is, I mean, which is, by the way, why you see some people in the Knesset and Israeli and Zionist commentators, you know, saying, oh, it's time for the U.S., for Israel to go it alone without U.S. help.
Good luck.
Please. No, really, please. That'd be great. That'd be great. You know, bye, little bird. Bye, little fascist little bird.
Wrecked. Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. Now, who's going to help?
Of course, they have nukes, which is like, why on earth would you leave a bunch of psychopaths with nukes? And yet they have nukes.
Yeah, and
should be brought up in negotiations.
If I were Iran, I would bring that up in negotiations. I'd say Israel has to agree to dismantle its nuclear stockpile.
Yes, they're a threat to the region.
They are.
It's the same argument, right? It's like you're bitching about us and nukes. Fair enough.
Yeah, can any Zionist credibly say, no matter how much they love Israel, can they credibly say that there's no world in which Israel would launch a first nuclear strike against another country in the Middle East? No fucking way. It's not possible. I mean, it's not credible. It's like, of course there's a possibility. I mean, it's that possibility is significantly higher than zero. For that reason alone, right? I mean, whereas Iran never really even started a nuclear weapons program. So, like, what are you guys even talking about? I mean, if I were Iran, I would definitely make that an important condition.
Yeah, live in their world. I mean, because as you pointed out in the very beginning, Iran wasn't trying to get a nuke. People like me were screaming, you should already have one.
Right.
But they weren't trying to get one. And so Donald, I mean, God, man, this is the argument.
That Saddam and Muammar Gaddafi, you know, are like, you should have, I was stupid. Don't do what
The North Korean model. Yeah. The North Korean model. You either have the model for Libya or you have the model for North Korea. The North Korean model. But more to the point, what's interesting in this is the WMD argument for the U.S. is out. It's kind of like the Russia argument, right? Where Trump, they say, well, Trump, what did you get out of the negotiations with Putin? Well, Putin is not going to take over all of Europe. That's what I got out of it. And it's like, well, he wasn't trying to do that anyway.
No. Like,
you accomplished something that was never postulated. But if you think about it, it's something you can live in. I've created a fake reality. And within the context of this fake reality, I can now use the fact that it's a fake reality to find my exit out of it by claiming an accomplishment that was never even on the table and was only postulated in the fake reality. So Trump could say, well, Iran is not going to get WMDs. I'm out. Okay, well, they were never trying to. But Iran could also point out, okay, fair enough. If you don't want us to get nukes, then Israel needs to give up their nukes also. Live in that
world. I like it. No, I mean, we're on the same page here. Guys, as always, if you have any comments or questions, please put them in the live chat. If you're watching live in the 9 a.m. hour on the East Coast, Rumble Rants and Super Chats get priority, but we look at them all. Producer Robbie West puts them up. We have some comments all piled up. Let's go through them. No, I am not familiar with the French metal band Gojira, so I can't say whether I'd be a fan, but metal's not really my thing, more punk rock and stuff related to it. Let's see. Luke, love listening to the podcast at work, wanted to watch live to let you know with the three of you, it shows healthy debate about politics can be done without someone getting punched in the face. True. If you so, we need to see Ted's punk rock shirt collection. Okay, we could do that on a Rumble Premium. I'd have to get him, a lot of them, I'd have to get them back from my kid. I gave a lot of those away.
Oh, did you?
To my kid when he turned 18 and he was starting to develop, a fashion sense before he went to college. Greg, will we see war ending again today? Let's have the war end every hour, you know, just because. Manchild, I'm with Robbie. I usually put 6 to 8 down a day. I assume we're talking about coffees here. Sometimes I get a to-go coffee with 4 shots of espresso and brewed coffee. I'm a fiend. That's a lot of coffee. And I love coffee, but that's a lot of coffee.
Coffee.
Yeah. Let's see. Where the gopher tortoise roam, there's a big difference with having supported campaign trail Trump and supporting actual President Trump.
What's the difference?
Well, the campaign trail Trump was peace Trump.
Yeah, but just because somebody says something doesn't mean they mean it.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Although the thing is, first term Trump was definitely less worried than second term Trump.
Yeah, but he was hemmed in.
Even though he had John Bolton there bugging him.
He was hemmed in. I think he was hemmed in. I mean, if you think about it, the whole Russiagate stuff put a constraint on the behavior of Trump in the first term. Mm-hmm. At least I think so. Tell me your thoughts.
No, I think that's true. And I think also there's the whole second term, like, yeah, you're a lame duck, but you're on your way out. You got nothing to lose. And, I also think, like, weirdly, Bibi was whispering in his ear that he would have a certain kind of immortality in Israel by doing some things like taking out Iran, right? Like, you know, you're going to, all these previous presidents wanted to do it. They never did it. But you could be the one who finally accomplishes this. You know, the domestic policy is hard, but, this, you know, I mean, it's true. The president is constrained domestically in a million different ways. But in terms of foreign policy, the U.S. president is almost an emperor. Yeah. So, I mean, and look how he just blew through the War Powers Act. He doesn't care. Like, doesn't matter. So,
well,
I mean,
if Congress doesn't pull your chain, then the president is effectively a god emperor. But let's be clear, they could pull his chain, they just don't. Like, Congress has abdicated issues of war to the executive branch, and the executive branch has not looked back. It's just sad.
True. Manchild, well, campaign trail Trump was all about showing crowds how he can jerk off two dudes at the same time to YMCA. President Trump is all about showing crowds how he can fuck everyone at the same time. Annie Anna, did you see Trump's comment on Iran's uranium? Apparently Trump is now okay with Iran diluting the uranium in their country. You could see that one coming.
Because they were never going to get rid of it. like every time he said that.
They're not going to dilute it either. They're just going to keep what they've got. You know?
Yeah, I kept thinking about myself, never going to happen.
No.
Like, you could say this all you want. That's never – like, that's the dumb part, right? It's like, why on earth am I going to put something up as an anti that I don't have the power to do anything about and to say it over and over and over and over again? And Iran, if you're Iran, what are your thoughts? You're not getting shit from us. Meaning, I don't care. There are times where I play chess – where I'm like, I don't give a shit. What happens in this game? I'm holding the square. Like, I don't care what happens. And I would imagine Ron feels the same way. I don't care what happens. We are holding on to this.
Yeah, I mean, the United States overplayed its hand repeatedly. I mean, this was a long overdue. I mean, the Iranians, the comeuppance here was long overdue. So,
Who you telling?
I
Who
mean,
you?
these giant mutant chickens are home to roost. Seaman 2420, the problem is the NDDA, Section 224, and Senate 62 merging our military and intel with Israel.
Yes.
This is a treaty obligation, which by the Constitution requires two-thirds state approval. Congress and Senate are so corrupt.
That's not a treaty obligation. The National Defense Authorization Act is purely internal. The issue that's not a treaty being made with Israel, if that makes sense. That is,
It's
they're
a
using,
cooperation agreement.
it's just a cooperation agreement. It's like an administrative issue in the way that they're trying to make it. Like we're appointing someone who is the person who's engaging with the Israeli military and feeding them US secrets and US information and technology, et cetera, et cetera. That's the mechanism. It's almost like I'm hiring Bob in order to deal with military management between Israel and the US. It's like anything I need to know, I go to Bob. But the catch is, hey, is Bob going to be a Zionist? Yes. Bob is going to be a Zionist. Bob is going to have dual loyalties. And it's not even dual loyalties. His loyalty is going to be very specific. Like, so I, and it's the other thing of information sharing, like secrets sharing, that even the president will have difficulty putting the kibosh on. I mean, granted, you can make the argument that the president says, well, we'll share some secrets, but not all. Whatever. It shouldn't be there in the first place. It's treasonous. You're working with a genocidal maniac state.
Manchild, thanks for the dollar. Iran's foreign ministry says the main part of the text was almost finalized, but the Americans were being greedy and raising new requests, which we've heard throughout this process has been a thing. Like I keep bringing up the waiter, right? Like, hey, can I get some, I need another glass of water. Oh, sure. Everything good? Everyone good? Oh, and also mustard. And also, oh, can I have more bread? And butter. I need butter with the bread, not oil. And it's just like they just keep you. And at a certain point, the waiter's going to be like, "I think we're done here. I think you need to just go."
Well, as I kept saying, Iran was going to be tested. There was no situation where a hegemon was going to deal with a regional power and accept the regional power effectively telling it to fuck off. Like, meaning they were going to continuously be tested. Does this include Lebanon, yay or nay? How willingness are they to fight for Lebanon? Are they willing to strike Israel in defense of Lebanon in the way that they said? Are they willing to accept X or Y? Like, meaning there was no situation that the US was ever going to stop pressing them in the context of some kind of deal or agreement. Which, I mean, keep in mind, the entire point of what.
They can't stop. They just can't help themselves.
Well, the entire point of what the US wanted to do was to destroy the Iranian state. The weapons of mass destruction was always just a fig leaf and a tiny one at that in order to try to accomplish that objective. The rub is that also allows you an out. Okay, we got them to say they don't want a WMDs. We've accomplished our objectives. It's their out. It was always their out. It's either we smash the state or we can leave with our tail between our legs, claiming that we got them to do something that they never wanted to do in the first place. This is obviously absurd. But
Ridiculous. More comments. K. Greg, thanks for the $5. Thanks for not punching anyone in the face today. Okay, you're welcome. Frank Field, thanks for the $5. Also, how do you get Gen X off your asses, off their asses? I always rack my brain this question. Frank, I gotta ask what you mean by that. Off their asses in what way? You want them to work harder? You want them to protest? What do you want them to do? I don't know.
he wants them to get engaged, I think. Frank used to be on my audience. I think he wants them to get engaged. I think he wants them to. It's the sense. Like, we know for a fact that younger voters tend to be flaky. So, politicians who has a huge young audience, oftentimes people want an older audience because they actually go out and vote. If the young audience gets engaged, then they can change electoral patterns. I think what it boils down to is, though, if you're talking about the youth in Iran, if you're talking about the youth in Russia, if you're talking about the youth in the US, the youth, etc., They may have ideas, but oftentimes it doesn't necessarily seem like they're politically engaged in a way that changes the context of a nation. That's what I take it as. It's like, okay, your country is attacking other countries. What are you doing?
Mm.
Nothing.
Well, I mean, Gen X, though, I mean, look, Barack Obama is as old as you can be. He's a Gen Xer, officially. He's 64. I'm 62. I wrote a Gen X manifesto, Revenge of the Latin.
Wait. When we're saying Gen X, what's the age range for Gen X? Because maybe I'm getting this wrong. I thought this was
thinking of Gen Z, maybe. So Gen X is basically people born from 1961 to 1974, roughly.
So technically, I'm not in Gen X.
So you're old millennial, maybe?
I'm 48. Yeah, I guess I'm an old millennial.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're probably...
Wait, so what's millennial? Millennial comes after Gen X.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so millennial, technically. An old millennial, I bet.
Yeah, I think you're on the cusp. You can kind of choose. You're in between. But as am I. I could have technically chosen to be a boomer. But so could have Obama. But I spent a lot of time I have bookshelves groaning with books about Generation X and all that stuff. I mean, you know, doing research for Revenge of the Latchkey Kids and so on. And I got to say, like and I love demographics. That, you know, I'm a devotee of Howard Strauss, who wrote the book Generations and 13th Gen. Gen X. The answer to the question is Gen X is not going to get off their asses. Gen X was basically told their entire lives, starting in childhood, we don't care about you. We don't care about people your age. Whatever age of Gen Xer is a bad time to be that age. Look at now, they're getting rid of Social Security the very year that I'm planning to start collecting it, right? So that's, that's kind of like how that rolls. I mean, Gen X is disengaged. We are wry. We're cheering on Gen Z. We love you guys. We do. Whenever we talk about you guys, we're like, man, we respect them. We love them. The future, you know, if there's hope, you know, if there's hope, like Winston, Winston Smith said, it's with the trolls, with the proles. If there's hope, it lies with Gen Z. But we're too old now. I mean, you guys marginalized, you know, the boomers marginalized us. We were, you know, pushed out of the way every step. So I'm sorry, but we're the lost generation 2.0, and we're not going to get off our asses. So
okay, so 65.
Oh, it's Gen Z. They have the energy for it.
Okay, so 46 to 61. So both of us are, I guess, part of Gen X. And I guess I'm at the very tail end of it at 77. I was born in 77. I mean, I don't know what's wrong with Gen X. I mean, like, you know, the old generation was the greatest generation, as they call themselves, the greatest generation. Imagine calling yourself that. I know why they call themselves that, because of the wars. But still, it's a hell of a thing to call yourself that. Yeah, I don't know what happened to Gen X. I don't know if it was just the time period. I mean, we're talking effectively about the 80s, like the 70s and the 80s.
Think about it. Like, when I was a little kid, it was the end of the Vietnam War movement. The hippies were cutting their hair and getting jobs at banks. The suburbs were expanding even more. And so, you know, basically you got the sense like wildness, radicalism, liberalism even, caring even about the poor or the downtrodden. All that was falling out of fashion. You know, Reagan became president when I turned 18. It's like basically the party's over. And it's, you know, basically you look out for numero uno. Even if you're out protesting in the street, you're going to be out there by yourself, you know. And so what's the point? So I think that's, you know, that's why Gen X is the way it is. It's not like they're bad people. It's not like they're lazy. It's just that, like, there's no point spinning your wheels trying to, you know, start a movement that doesn't exist.
And we got NAFTA, we got all the outsourcing, we got all this other crap, we got the hollowing out of the American middle class, we got the hollowing out of the industrial base of the entire country. So it's just kind of just like, it's a nice future that you had for yourself and your kids. Us boomers are going to mortgage it. Piss off.
But I think the point that Frank was trying to make was that shit happened on our watch.
But but it didn't. It happened. It really was the boomers who did it. I mean, Douglas Copeland, who wrote the book Generation X, which coined which named that generation, in the book, he talks about having seen someone driving a boomer driving a camper with a bumper sticker on the back that said, "We're spending our kids' inheritance," and making the case that that sentiment was like the attitude of the baby boomer generation. Like, you know, we got ours. Fuck you. And, you know, look, I used to believe in that. I've come to believe that in many ways it was unfair to the boomers. You know, they tried to have a revolution. They tried to liberate women. They tried to liberate gays. They tried some things, right? They blew some they blew up some draft boards. They did some shit. But it's like, but overall, demographically, they did go in through a flock of locusts, a gaggle of locusts. Anyway, they came through and they fucking ate everything up and didn't leave much behind.
True, but did they do those things? I mean, that's supposed to Generation X doing them. I mean, if you talk about racist, sexist, bigoted, etc.
Well, the civil rights movement is boomers.
Those are like boomers. I mean, the civil rights movement, true, that did take place, I guess you could say, in the 60s.
But yeah, and the feminist movement, Gloria Steinem, that's boomers. True. Stonewall, boomers.
Yeah, but the homosexuality thing was Generation X.
Well, we were the first generation that seriously internalized liberal boomer sentiments, where yes. It wasn't really an issue for us. Like, we're not spending a lot. Most of us aren't spending a lot of time like being upset about who people are fucking. You know, true. We don't care. You know,
yeah, they did go through like a herd of locusts. I mean, all of those policies were effectively made by the elderly, which. Ideally, the boomers. I mean, those are the same people that are in Congress now fucking over the rest of the country.
Yeah.
True.
So let's see. F you so, thanks for the dollar. Trump got a Star Trek Wrath of BB brainworm. Manchild, thanks for the dollar. We already have that one. Peter Ive, thanks for the $2. The U.S. refuses to allow the Iran soccer team to sleep in the U.S. Yep. So they have to fly up from Tijuana for each game in LA, I hope the opposing teams forfeit in solidarity.
But they don't. Like, I agreed. I'm sorry. I don't mean to get hyped up on this. Agreed. I found it to be a humiliation. I found it to be absolutely outrageous that the rest of the teams don't say, we're out. We're out. We're not playing this game.
It's not
sports. And the FIFA.
Yeah, literally, when you realize it's an unfair advantage that you have fighting a team that has to, you know, travel, you know, a substantial distance across a very, by the way, a terrible international border. Have you ever driven? Yes. Have you ever done that border crossing from TJ into San Diego?
Fortunately, no. I took a flight.
It blows. I mean, it's like that wait, 4 hours is standard. Like, you know, sucking up exhaust fumes. It sucks. It's really bad. So, I mean, it's not good for the team. I mean, these are athletes. They shouldn't even be there.
It's not good for anybody. And the fact that the other teams are perfectly fine taking advantage of the advantage that the U.S. gave to those other teams is outrageous. I find, like, there's something to be said about solidarity. And it is something to be said when it is clear that that is not part of the process. You would think that this would matter more than the game itself. But apparently to these fools, the game, soccer, which is one of the most boring games on the planet, that matters more to them than anything else, including how people are being screwed over in their own sport. Like, it's outrageous.
Let me put it, just to echo and to build upon, if you're, you know, whatever, the Tunisian team, and you decide to forfeit the game to Iran out of solidarity, that is far more memorable than just beating them 2-1, right? I mean, Jean-Paul Sartre is far more remembered for rejecting the Nobel Prize than many of the winners who accepted it. he didn't like the fact that it had been financed by war.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's like you are defined by the things you refuse to do in many ways more than the things you agree to do.
I guess to me, I wasn't even thinking about it in the remembrance sense. I was just thinking about it in the right sense. Like it's like if I go to a chess tournament, for example, and the chess tournament just so happens to be in another country, and I find out that I'm representing the U.S. and let's say the country decides, okay, well, we don't want to have XYZ players. And let's say it's not a good reason. It's just we don't like the fact that they're Russians. We don't like the fact that they're Iranians. We don't like the fact that they're Chinese. I'm not playing in that tournament. Right? Like, it's the principle. It's this idea that you're screwing over people who I, on some level, identify with in a competitive sense. And it's the competition to me that's important. It's not about whether I win or lose. Yes, obviously, I want to win. But it's not really a win if indeed I'm not playing the people who are who's supposed to be there. And by the way, who may be the best people to play. Like it's the principle of it to me. And especially for something like this as a World Cup on the world stage. You know, they actually asked the FIFA president this. I think it was the BBC. And was like, hey, you don't take issue with the fact that the U.S. is behaving this way? And they started listing and enumerating. Well, you didn't let this from the guy from Somalia, the referee. You didn't allow the people from so-and-so in. Iran wasn't able to get tickets. Iran's game team is not able to play in Mexico. Why are you okay with this as FIFA president? And he gives some glib comment like, how do I control who is allowed into a particular country? Or when it tells them Europe or the UK, am I or whoever is the chief going to be allowed to dictate who is allowed into the country? What a stupid fucking response. What a stupid response. If you want to say as FIFA chief, hey, we are not allowing this game to go to any country that is not going to allow XYZ, period. That's what you should say.
100%. The whole Oh, but there's money involved. We wouldn't make as much money. Not that.
Russia. They were able to make the money.
Fucking stupid. Okay. John D. Cockefeller, thanks so much for the $5. Apparently, Trump has ended the war in Iran 8 times, opened the Strait 12 times, and made peace between Israel and Iran 4 times, according to himself. Nobel Peace Prize confirmed. Where the gopher tortoise roam, I'm 47 and refuse to be called a millennial. K. Greg, Ted, every few years I read that Social Security is broke. I will start Social Security in 2 years. Hope it isn't broke by then. Well, it's just going to start running out of money by 2032 and require about a 22% cut in benefits. I'm going to have to spreadsheet out and game out. I was planning to hold out till I was 67 to get the higher monthly payout. But now I'm not so sure because, I mean, that's like, you know, if they're going to be slashing it anyway, you can at least get what you can get for a couple of years that you wouldn't have gotten otherwise. And nobody knows how long they're going to live. So I don't know.
This is bullshit to me. Social Security is not broke. And what's worse about it, they keep taking money from Social Security and then putting IOUs and then not refilling the IOUs. They're doing shit like that. Look, the reality of it is your country can make a decision to pay for whatever it needs to pay for. Just like you in your life can make the decision to pay for whatever you need to pay for. If you have a weed habit, the weed habit is not giving you anything back, but you decide that the weed habit is
necessary. A priority.
Right, it's a priority, right?
Right.
Or if you have an alcohol habit, if you have a habit for ho-hos and ding-dongs, if you have a habit for Krispy Kreme, these things are not benefiting you. By the same token, you can decide that those are valuable, hence you pay for them. Social Security is a radical benefit. We as a society can make the determination that this is perfectly fine within a context to pay for.
And there's a lot of easy fixes, right? Like, you know, like for currently, it literally is the most retrograde tax on the books, right? It's an income tax that's capped at somewhere like, if you make, I forget what the cap is, but you know,
it was $125,000 a year or
something like that.
Whatever that number is, they stop.
Basically, all money above that amount is not subject to Social Security tax. So basically, only poor and working class and lower middle class people pay that that social security tax. Everybody else hardly pays it at all. Elon Musk basically doesn't pay social security tax.
Everywhere he doesn't have to pay anymore. What he pays, it just stops it at a certain amount. So
right. But as a percentage of his income, it's nothing.
It's like nothing. Yeah.
So, I mean, so the point is they could just raise that cap, get rid of the cap, right?
Get rid of the cap.
But also, it's what you said. It's a fiction to be like, oh, the government has different pots of money. We can't take it out of this pot of money. We can't take the money out of the Israel pot and give it to the old people. It's like, sure you can. Of course you can. And when a company says, well, it's in that part of the budget. There's nothing we can do. Yeah, you can. I mean, you know, it's not Moses coming down with the tablets. My God. I mean, yeah, of course you can change it, right?
Right. Yeah, it's not the Ten Commandments. It's not set in stone. Your government makes the determination, meaning a public. Governments are not coming from the Bible, right? They're not the Ten Commandments. Your society chooses what it wants, what it doesn't want, what it defines as important, what it doesn't define as important. It makes those choices. And, you know, the budget is the determining factor in that. If we believe that Social Security is a social good, then we pay for the social good. It's just that.
And speaking of social goods, let's talk about nitrogen asphyxiation. But Lee NYC XX is calling you out, Jamal. Did Jamal just disparage my sport? The dude who plays chess, LOL.
Chess is a miraculous game, sir. It's a miraculous sport.
It's a game, right?
It's a sport.
I mean, no, it's not a sport. Chess isn't a sport.
What do you mean it's not a sport?
It's a sport. It's not a sport. It's important. It's not a sport.
What do you define as a sport? What's the difference?
Golf is barely, I don't even think, a sport. It requires physical exertion.
Do you know the amount of brain power that is used and the amount of...
Sure, but that's not physical exertion.
And you have to sit at the board. You have to move the piece. Especially if you're playing blitz.
Okay, that's not physical exertion. Yeah, I mean, it's true. There's guys who play in like Washington Square Park. Holy shit. But I love chess. It's one of my favorite things. But yeah, it's just.
I didn't know you played.
I do. I used to be pretty good.
We're going to have to chess.com. We're going to have to.
All right. We'll do it. All right, here we go. Horses are people too. The best thing about the World Cup is watching all the Europeans marvel at our 2 kilo bottles of ketchup. Oh, my God. All right. So, again, please like, follow, and share, blah, blah, blah. Okay. The America, which purports to tell other countries how to live their lives, has a state in the Deep South called Alabama, where my DMZ co-host Scott Stantis lives, inexplicably. Voluntarily, he doesn't even have to. He used to have a job there, and he stayed there after he quit the job. But anyway, they have already executed 8 people by using nitrogen gas. Right. So, basically, the way this worked is they choke you to death. I mean, it's literally no different than if you just simply put a pillow over the dude's face and just asphyxiate him. They put a mask over his face. They turn off the air and they put in pure nitrogen. Air is 78% nitrogen, but you got to have the argon and the oxygen to live too. And they cut that off and then you choke to death. They've done this to 8 people already who were sentenced to death in Alabama. The U.S. Supreme Court agreed with the federal appeals court that it's cruel and unusual under the U.S. Constitution. And so therefore, they're not going to be able to do that. That means of execution is out. For the record, the gentleman who, Jeffrey Lee, who was scheduled to be executed last night when this decision came down at the very last minute, basically said, he had said, I'm willing to be executed by firing squad, like Gary Gilmore. But the state of Alabama is like, no, we don't want to do that. I'm not sure what the reason they didn't want to do that, but
it looks bad.
Oh yeah, as opposed to suffocating a guy.
Yeah, it does. Because from suffocating, they get it looks medical, right? It's like there's a doctor nearby and they're putting the thing on and the person's gone. As opposed to the brutal, true reality of it is you're killing somebody. Right. Hence, put them on a firing line, let the guns go off, let's see the person get shot, let's see the person fall over. That's real.
Yeah. Well, apparently it's the nitrogen asphyxiations were a shit show in Alabama, according to the journalists and family members who witnessed them. People went on for minutes. The people were like kicking, jumping around and struggling, and apparently it was horrific. So we don't even know under traditional lethal injection cocktails, which are no longer possible because the drugs are made in Europe and the Europeans won't export them to the United States for this use, right? So, but we don't even know how much suffering those people endured. The death penalty just shouldn't be allowed. I mean, the state should set the highest possible standard. And murdering people is the lowest possible behavior that a human being is capable of. So, I mean, for that simple reason, we shouldn't be doing it. I'm not saying that, like, this guy Jeffrey Lee or anyone else on death row doesn't deserve to be executed. I'm just saying that they shouldn't be executed. Like, we're not in a position to do that. Like, as a state is like, we're not God. The state is not God. It's not our place. It's like, not to mention, if one innocent person has ever been executed, and they have, then the whole thing, to me, just fails. It's like an epic fail.
Does the state have a position on God? Meaning, do they believe or disbelieve in that as a legal entity?
I mean, in reality, yes, but it shouldn't.
If the state shouldn't have a perspective on God, then the state is the highest authority, right?
But the state, I guess the point is there is no authority high enough to make this determination that we're in a position to kill people.
Power is taken. It's not given. If the state takes the power to do so, then it takes the power to do so.
True.
The state, this is not me making an argument for the death penalty. I guess it sounds like I am. I guess I'm more so making this argument that power is taken. If the public or the state takes a particular power, then it takes that power. There is nothing above the state in regards as an entity or as a Leviathan to tell the state to do X or Y. It defines its own reality about what's right or wrong. Now, yes, there's a moral case to be made, but we're just talking about legal and state and the way that states operate. Mm-hmm. So I don't know about the death penalty. I am conflicted. If anything happened to anybody in my family or something like that, I would want the person dead. It's just being me doing honest. But I also have the sense, kind of like you, that the state fucks stuff up. And that if it's between killing a person versus keeping a person living for God knows how long in a jail cell, the jail cell is probably even worse. But I don't want the state to be able to not correct its mistakes. But you can make an argument that it can't correct a mistake if it puts a person in prison for 30 years and the person is innocent.
Yeah,
you've taken my life. My life can't be given back to me in either case, whether it's the 30 years or whether it's my life in general. There's no way to mend that gap. But I get your point.
Yeah, there's no take backs, right? Like with these eight people that the U.S. Supreme Court has now finally waddled in and said should not have been executed this way. Oh, well, sucks to be them, right? Okay, so we have a comment that we should.
Yeah, I'm conflicted on this one. I'm always conflicted on the death penalty as an issue.
We should also, and then there's this 8647 story. So Just Filming Really said, so this is the one thing I disagree with. You just said the government can choose to pay for this and that. Why should a rich person have to pay more? If you go to school, study hard, and get rich, why should you have to pay for the class clown? I don't agree rich people should have to contribute more. What's the point in working hard if I have to pay for people who don't work hard? Well, I mean, that sort of assumes that people are rich because they work harder than people who are poor who don't work hard, which is a ridiculous assumption. But more to the point, let's just assume that is true. If you're Elon Musk or Bill Gates, think it's like basically you're in the box seats at the stadium, right? You have the best view, you have the best food, you have the hot chicks, you know, everything's good for you. You should pay the highest ticket. And like, if the country is kind of like an arena, you're getting the best view if you're rich. You have the most, you know, you're rich, you can call up the president of the United States and he'll take your call. That's not true about, you know, us. So
yeah.
I mean, the people who get the most services from the government should pay the most to the government. It's just like attending a sporting event, in my opinion.
And this fake perspective that they did it by themselves. Yeah. If you were living in, you know, Timbuktu in a mud hut, you wouldn't have those opportunities.
No.
You wouldn't be rich. I hope you get my point. Like, yeah, you are living in a particular society that has allowed you certain benefits and certain bonuses. You have clean air, clean water, within reason.
Lawn water, within reason.
Yeah, you have all of it, like all of these opportunities. And if you're talking about like an Elon Musk or something like that, there is a huge amount of money coming from us, the taxpayers, the government, going to you to do whatever business enterprise you're doing. The public, you have the educated public to effectively be able to work with you in whatever enterprise you're effectively doing. The government rolled the dice on you. You benefited. Congratulations. You're going to have a very rich and a very productive life.
You win. Let me, last and definitely least, members of the D.C. Fire Department, the U.S. Park Police, and the National Guard have responded to etchings of 8647 on the grass at the National Mall. The Interior Department described the markings as deranged vandalism and promised to hold those responsible accountable. Emergency vehicles were circling the grass. Cops were standing over brown patches in the grass, wearing gloves, collecting samples for testing from the grass with material in the yellow case. Pedestrians were not permitted to walk on the grass, and a Park Service helicopter hovered and circled overhead.
Now, what is 8647? Oh, kill the president. Is that what that means?
Well, 86 means get rid of, right? So okay. To 86.
But I thought 86 was like, a so police.
This is like James, yeah, this is like, what's his name? James Comey was prosecuted for the seashell photo that said 8647 that he posted to his Instagram. And so literally that's a thing now. The other day I saw a sign by one of my neighbors that says 8647. I thought about photoing it and putting it on my socials. And then I thought, oh, I could actually be prosecuted.
I think 86 means to kill.
It does not.
Okay, it doesn't. It just means get rid of. Okay.
No, that's like deep six might mean to kill. 86 is, it's waiter, it's a restaurant code. It used to mean like, get rid of this customer, like make them.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Like they would write that on a check or something, like 86. That's where it comes
from. Okay, then why are they responding this way? They're responding like somebody's talking about killing.
I guess it could mean kill, but it's not really, that's not a, let me put it this way. It's in dispute, right? Let's just say that.
Okay. But either way, it means get rid of this person. However you interpret, get rid of.
Right? Where the gopher says, and we've got to go, 86 meant off the menu. In the restaurant industry. So like, in other words, like say like, you know, the tofu burger, 86, that like it's gone.
Okay.
All right. Got to go. Thanks everyone for joining us, JT. I will see you Monday at 9 a.m. We'll see the rest of you at 9 a.m. Eastern time. Please stay tuned for TMI coming up right now. DMZ America podcast with Scott Santis and myself. We'll be focusing on the graphic novel industry in an hour from now. So you might want to check that out, YouTube and Rumble. And we will talk to you later. See ya.
Bye.